Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the South Bay Show, South Bay Spotlight, on August 9th, 2018. Live, love, laugh, and leave a legacy. That's what we do here in the South Bay of Los Angeles, and it's a really beautiful place to do just that.
The South Bay Show is brought to you by the Academy of Foreign Languages. If you have any interest in learning a new language or brushing up on existing language skills, you should know about the Academy of Foreign Languages. Located in Palos Verdes, the Academy of Foreign Languages specializes in the art of communication. Their mission is to provide the finest language instruction possible. They recognize that each student has distinctive needs and craft their teaching technique to optimize an individual's particular learning skills. At the Academy of Foreign Languages, they strive to create a comfortable environment conducive to learning. So whether you're learning a new language or would simply like to converse in your native tongue, the Academy of Foreign Languages can accommodate you. For additional information, visit their website at academyofforeignlanguages.com, that's all spelled out, or call 310-975-4133.
I'm your host, Joe Terry, and you can read all about our many adventures on Facebook at facebook.com/The South Bay Show. Persistence, passion, principle, and purpose. That's what we talk about here on the South Bay Show. And of course, I'm not alone because of our great partnership with South Bay by Jackie.com and executive producer of the South Bay Show, Jackie Balestra. Hey, Jackie, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well this morning, Joe, but you don't sound very present. You sound a little hollow there. I know what's going on, but I'm just saying you sound a little hollow.
Understood. I don't want to be hollow.
No, you don't want to be hollow. So anyway,
no.
I just have to update you on my Florida visitor has returned home to the nest. My niece Piper was visiting us for a month. And I just took her to the airport yesterday, and she's back home safe and sound. And now I can return to my adult-centric activities. I'm happy to say.
Excellent.
Excellent. That's much better. Thank you. That's much better. So.
All right.
And
I'm so glad.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, I'm so glad that Piper had this time with you. I mean, that's pretty special, Jackie. Not many aunts would take their niece and show them the town and all that for several weeks. That's pretty special.
Well, this is really funny because, you know, she's here for a month. I took her to a bunch of events. I introduced her to half of the South Bay, and just about every single
right.
one of them said, "You have the most awesome aunt." So I like playing the awesome aunt role.
Right. Fantastic.
I always enjoy that. And I just tell you, this past weekend was nutty because, again, she left Wednesday, but it was just jam-packed right up until the end. Sunday, we went to the first concert on the beach in Hermosa to see the
right.
English Beat,
right.
which was fantastic. That band sounds
yeah.
amazing. And it was a gorgeous night, just an absolutely gorgeous night. And, of course, we were out there with, I don't know, 8,000 of our closest friends. And it's, you know, the
yes.
whole neighborhood, everybody's out. You're bumping into people you know left and right because everybody's there. So that was fantastic. And then Tuesday night, we had our National Night Out block party. On Tuesday
Ooh.
Night, I told you that I spent the last couple of months, this was only our second annual event on our block. But this year we
mm-hmm.
decided to try and get a street closure permit, which took
mm-hmm.
me 2.5 months to get the signatures of everybody on the street because you can't get the permit unless you get every neighbor to sign off. So we did that. We submitted, we got the permit, and everybody on the block, you know, just helped out in every way they could. Some people had sawhorses so we could block the streets. People came out. It was so great. They brought out their games. We had cornhole. We had a couple of different games. We had one neighbor bring out a snow cone machine. Another neighbor brought out, made a lemonade stand, like a classic lemonade stand. People, you know, brought out food and drinks, and it was so much fun. And of course, what was funny was our street closure permit was from 6 to 9 p.m. Well, just literally as we were blocking off the street, a motorcycle police officer came up the street and he said, okay, where is the main thing happening? I said, it's the whole block. And he said, well, I see that tent set up over there. I said, yeah, that's my house. He said, all right. So he came over and he parked his motorcycle and got out and was there at 6 o'clock. And within a couple of minutes, police car came by with three or four other police officers. And we had other police officers and cadets coming by all night long. And then the biggest surprise of surprise, Chief Irvine showed up. The new chief of Torrance. Yes. So it was very exciting. And I played show and tell with the chief. I dragged her up and down the block to meet all the neighbors, and everybody was very excited about that. So it was just a fantastic event. All the neighbors got it was great. It was fantastic. Yeah, it was really good.
It's very important to know your neighbors.
Yeah. Well, that's
very important.
That's the whole purpose of National Night Out.
Right.
Get to know your local law enforcement. It makes things easier, you know, when things go sideways. If you know your neighbors and you know your local law enforcement, things will go smoother. Trust me.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wonderful. I know Piper's going to remember this forever, all the stuff that you guys did.
Oh, no, we did everything. I mean, we did everything. We went to concerts and movies, books. I mean, we just – and then she did surf camp. She did surf camp 2 weeks. She did surf camp. Not the first week, but the second week, and she skipped the third week, and then she went back in the fourth week. And she made some friends there. Actually, she invited some of her friends from surf camp to the block party. So that was fun.
You know what was so great about it?
It was so funny because we've never done, as I said, this is only the second time we did it. Last year we didn't close off the street, and it was so great because the minute those barricades went up, kids were running and riding their bikes and their skateboards and their scooters up and down the street, down the middle of the street. You know, and people were standing out in the street. We didn't have to worry about cars coming through. It was safe. Everybody was thrilled.
So do you have a lot of new kids on your block? Have you noticed that?
Well, yes. That's the reason why I decided to pull it together last year, because last year we had 8 houses on our street sell, and we had 8 new families move in. That's not in addition to the 1 or 2, you know, the years before. So there were a lot of new people on the block, and I thought, okay, this is the time to do. You know, this is the time to do this. We got a lot of new people. Let's get to know each other and make it happen. So, yeah, there were a ton of kids.
We find that as well in on our block. A lot of new families, new kids. So the block party this year is going to be exciting. We normally do it just before Labor Day. So hopefully someone will start organizing. It's a little bit late to get it organized just before Labor Day, but we'll see.
You know, it's not easy, but I'm fortunate because we have a block captain. We have a neighborhood watch block captain, Howard, who he's the one that got everybody's contact information, and he sends out, you know, all the information, because there's other stuff throughout the year. You know, it's not just the National Night Out. That's my thing. You know, I handle that. But he handles all the other stuff. You know, when we have meetings for the neighborhood watch, you know, different things. So we got and as I said, a lot of our neighbors, you know, just really went above and beyond. So it's good.
Beautiful.
It's good. But it takes work. It takes work. It takes work. So
it takes a village.
Yeah. In this case, it takes a street.
Yeah. Well. We have some exciting things to talk about today. This is going to be great. Along with knowing your neighbors, it's really important to get your own goals and your own, kind of confidence together for your activities. And we have someone that we're going to talk to today that can really help with that. Jackie, who's our guest today?
Our guest this morning is Rosanne Liu, the best-selling author of You Did What Now? And How to Survive Elementary School. Her third book, Badassery 101, 10 Secrets to Be the Confident Boss of Your Life, is out now. It's on Amazon, and will shortly be followed by a collaboration book, Mastering Your Inner Game and Phenomenal Women, in September. Now, besides 14 years of English language teaching experience to foreign students, Rosanne is also a speaker about self-confidence, goal-crushing, and independent publishing. She is a board member of the Volunteer Center of the South Bay, a member of the LMU Alumni Association, and South Bay Business Women's Association. She speaks to millennials and associations on how to show up to pursue goals with method, resourcefulness, and passion. An avid hiker and traveler, Rosanne lives in Redondo Beach with her family. Welcome to the program, Rosanne. We're so glad you could join us this morning.
Good morning. How are you guys?
Excellent.
Very
excellent.
Good.
Awesome.
Excellent. Thank you for joining us today, Rosanne. It's really, sort of timely because a lot of people are, sort of, if they have children, they're exploring back to school things. They're ending their vacations. It's going to be, back to school, back to the normal work week and so forth. It's a good time people start reevaluating how they're doing with their goals. Can you talk a little bit about why you got into this? And how you got into this this idea of being an author and a goal setter and helping people do that?
Absolutely, that's a great question. My first three books, really stem from my life experiences. So, for example, How to Survive Elementary School stems from my children's and my husband and my own experiences raising school age children. And as you can imagine, raising kids today is so different from 20, 30 years ago when I was, growing up. So I thought to put our experiences in a book format in order to use it as a platform to share it with other families out there who might be going through the same issues. And then my second book stems from my life experiences as well. You Did What Now? It's a lot of my, shenanigans and life lessons and what I've learned in my almost 40 years of life here on Earth. And some of them are funny stories. Some of them are, heartfelt. Some of them are just things I observe in life that I think other readers could resonate with. And so for this book, Badassery 101, it really stems from a lot from my pep talks with my friends on what they're trying to do in their lives and their struggles and my struggles, and how we found confidence and how I think confidence is so key to achieving what we really want in life. So I think this is another timely book that will really resonate with readers and in helping them go out and achieve what they really want. It takes a certain amount of badassery, if you will, to go out and live the life that you really want.
Joe, I got to jump in here because Rosanne, the number one rule, write about what you know.
Exactly.
That's the number one rule in writing. If people are like, I want to be a writer. What do you want to write? I don't know. You write about what you know best. And it sounds like that's exactly what you're doing.
I couldn't agree with more because when I go to writers' workshops and conferences, it keeps popping up how young adult YA genre in books and romance and sci-fi dealing with YA and the hybrid of that genre, it keeps coming up. They're saying it's so popular, it's so hot, you should write about this, you'll make a lot of money, blah, blah, blah. But at the end of the day, we have to do what we really know. And I'm not interested in YA or romance or sci-fi, but I really understand that self-confidence is key to living life. So I've written a book about it.
You know, Joe, remember we had, who was it? I'm drawing a blank. It was comedy. Oh, it was the crew from Senior Entourage. And it's the same thing. It's the same thing with comedians. The best comedians are the ones that take their experience in life, things that they've experienced or seen, friends and family experience, and they see the humor in it. You know, that's the best comedy. It's the same thing as what you're doing, right, Rosanny?
Absolutely. I mean, sometimes the funniest things come from our life, and we just have to, if we're producing some kind of media about it, whether it's art or books or, you know, the radio show like yours, we talk about what we really know. And our fan base could be those that either need our help in our media or they really resonate with what we're talking about because they've been through the trenches too in the same type of topic. So we're not trying to reach everybody, but when we talk about coming from a place of what we really know, you know, people will either get it or they won't, and our fan base is the people who will get it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Now, when we talk about, you know, writing, that's another topic, I think, Rosanny, that lots of people are curious about. As an author, you chose book form as the form to get your message out rather than video, rather than a podcast. Can you talk a little bit about that choice and what is the state of sort of authorship today? Lots of people, you know, have been talking about the dearth of bookstores, the death of bookstores, and how few bookstores there are. Can you talk a little bit about the industry of publishing?
Absolutely. Well, first, to answer your first question, I chose the book form because it's my favorite way to communicate, seconded by video and live interview like this. Because when you're writing, whether it's articles or books, you can really take your time in crafting what you want to communicate. There's room and space and time to review mistakes and really think about what you want to say and how you want to say it before you hit publish. So the chance to, put your best foot forward, book form. So I like that.
Mm-hmm.
And what's going on in publishing? Wow, it's changing so quickly, and I hear that over and over again, and I see it myself. You know, it's everything is so quick and digitized, and you can independently publish a book in a matter of a month. I wouldn't recommend it because you really need the time to go through the process. but it's highly accessible when we're publishing and uploading books on Amazon, so you could your audience. Is could be very wide and global. So this book, if it gets translated into other languages, it could become very global besides the English-speaking markets. So I love the fact that the publishing industry is changing so fast, and I think it's changing for the better for authors and readers in the fact that it's much more accessible now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, I love that. I love that because even just 10 years ago, maybe 15 years, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, you couldn't get a book published unless you had a family member in the industry. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could have a great idea, right? And it was just to break through that curtain of publishing was next to impossible. Now there are no more gatekeepers. It's wide open. It's the Wild West. Anybody can publish, which I absolutely love. As a matter of fact, two of my friends, just in the last month, I went to book launch parties for them. You know, it's so great. And you know, a lot of them are very specific. You know, it's a very specific topic. And they don't have to be, you know, a 1,000-page book. You know, a lot
right.
of people are publishing in you know, smaller volumes in soft cover paperback. It's the whole industry has been blown wide open, and I think that's a great thing. I think that's a fantastic thing. But as you were saying,
absolutely.
As you were saying, you need time to let it ferment. You know, you can't just write it down, mm-hmm. publish. You need time to let it – is ferment a good word? What's another good word for that?
marinate?
marinate? Yeah, you need time to let it marinate to make sure that you're getting your points across and it's written well and succinctly and stuff. But, yeah, no, that's – I'm with you on that. I do miss the bookstores because you know I'm a reader. You know I've only got two bookstores that I go to in the South Bay. You know, there's the Little Pages in Manhattan Beach, and the Barnes and Nobles up on Hawthorne. Which, by the way, every time I go in there, the place is packed. So I don't know how everybody could be going bankrupt. I don't understand that.
Well, they're reinventing the concept. They're reinventing the concept of a bookstore. It's not just a bookstore. It's a meeting place, a gathering place.
It's a cafe. It's a music studio. Mm-hmm. It's gaming. It's everything now. But well, you know, I guess they had
great place to get alone time and me time. I mean, that was one of my favorite things to do in high school and college was I would go to the local Barnes & Noble or Walden's bookstore. Remember Walden's? And through the book stacks or just read on my own. And that was like one of my favorite times to spend me time.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, Rosanny, we have to get into Badassery 101, 10 Secrets to be the confident boss of your life. We want to start with give us like the first secret.
The first secret is, hold on, I have some noise going through.
She's gonna use her mute button so that we don't hear the noise. Okay, that's okay.
Yes, a plane was flying over. Okay, so the first secret is, can I say bad words on the show?
Yes.
The secret is how to figure out how to do the hard shit and then do it. I think everything, a lot of things in life are hard, especially when we're talking about goals and dreams and going after what you really want. Everything's hard, right? But
right.
The process of learning how to do the hard shit and then doing it, that's what makes us badasses. That's where we can find the confidence is plowing through and figuring out how to do the hard stuff. And in the chapter, I go into details on how exactly you do that, such as by observing role models and reverse engineer a process and then tell people what you're up to because you never know what kind of help and where it's going to manifest if you just tell people, this is what I want, this is what I'm trying to do, this is what I'm struggling with. And you never know what kind of help will manifest as you put it out there. So I really
right.
break it down to three specific steps just for that secret alone of how to do the hard stuff.
And, you know, that's – I'll tell you something. You're brave to start there because the minute somebody sees getting the hard stuff done, they're going to be like, I don't want to do hard stuff. You know, you're so right on point. You're so right on point. No, seriously. I had a bunch of conversations over the last month with my niece about school. You know, she's going into junior year. I'm like, this is the most important year for you. You know, you have to ace your classes. You know, you got to take your SAT. You know, I'm like, get through this year. Get through this year and work as hard as you can. And it, you know, it's such a turnoff. You know, it's you know, to tell somebody to work hard. You know, just get through it, do it, just get through it, and they kind of tune out, you know?
I agree, because the natural human reaction is this is too hard. Why put up a resistance? We don't like resistance, right?
Right.
But so there's a tug of war going on between the brain and the heart. The heart wants what it wants. It has dreams. It has goals. It wants certain things in life. But the brain's like, wow, this is really hard. I'm working muscles I never knew I had, and I don't like working my muscles. This is what the brain is
right.
So the idea is to plow through that wall, plow through that monster resistance in order to teach the brain, listen, you got these muscles. I know you haven't worked in a while, but look, you're working it. And before you know it, you're going to be in better shape, the brain muscle, and you're going to be happier. And then you and the heart will be on the same page in helping out the human. So we really have to go through the resistance of teaching the brain, you know, you've got this muscle. You got to put it to work by doing the hard stuff because this is what you're really meant to do.
Yeah,
okay.
That's a tough one. That's a tough one.
Yeah. That reminds me of Badassery 101, Secret 1. That reminds me of this book. I guess it's called Eat the Frog or something like that.
Never heard of it.
It's about how if you eat a live frog at the beginning of every day, you'll never do anything worse for the rest of your day.
Oh, my Lord.
And
okay, that's
so the
awful.
Rest of the day is easy. Yeah, it's totally awful, and the rest of the day is going to be a piece of cake.
Is it a live
that's
frog
awful.
Or a cooked frog?
Yeah, live frog. It
oh,
has to be live,
boy.
Or it's not bad enough.
Or it doesn't count. Oh, that's just great.
It
not a goldfish, a frog.
I feel badly for the frog.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh,
wow.
Oh my God.
No, it has to be the first one. It has to be the first.
Yeah.
It has to be the first rule.
Choose the hard stuff.
And
right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know something? I'll be honest with you. I've always been like this, but whenever I have a task to do, you know, whether it's work related or personal or home or whatever, I always do the most difficult one first to get it out of the way.
Yeah.
I've just always done that. I have always done that. I just put my nose to the grindstone and just get it done. And then once that's done, you know, that burden's lifted and everything is easy after that. So I've just always kind of done that naturally. I guess I'm just I guess I just like to slam myself in the walls, you know. I'm a
I like it.
Punishment.
Right.
Yeah.
I guess.
I tend to do the easier stuff first because easy is easy and I get in the flow, right? Like, boom, boom, boom. I crank out these easy tasks. And I do the hard stuff last because I'm already in the flow. And having done the easy stuff kind of gives me the energy to keep going to do the hard stuff. And it kind of gives me a mental reward, if you will. Like, I've already done X, Y, and Z. That was easier. Okay, now I'm ready to do the hard stuff.
You know, that's an interesting
right.
You know, that's really interesting that you brought that up. Because, I work one way. You work another. That way works for you. I have my way that works for me. But there are a whole lot of people out there know where to start. You know, I have friends like that, and they want to accomplish something. Well, it's different scenarios. You know, you get up in the morning and you think, okay, I have to do this, I have to do this, I have to do this, 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 and they just don't know where to start. They might start someplace and walk away halfway through and then go to the next thing, or they get so overwhelmed that they don't even bother starting anything. They sit down and eat breakfast or something. That's really interesting. Yeah, there are some people that just cannot make the decision and start. But once you start, generally, if you just say let me plow through this, let me get started and plow through it, then generally, if you keep your focus, you can do it. But there are a lot of people out there that have no idea how to do that. And let me ask you something, Rosanny. Are you an organized person? Are you organized? Are you a list maker?
I am a list maker. I make lists of my list.
Yes.
The list makers inherit the world.
That's right. No, that absolutely. Yeah, Joe knows. I'm a list maker.
Yes.
Being organized.
You know,
I'm glad I know you, Jackie, because you're a list maker.
Like you said, the first part of it's really hard to do the hard stuff, right? But the two tips I would share is that, and another friend of mine who's in the coaching industry, he said it just yesterday. You guys might know him, Mark Merkovich of Capture Your Power, and he had a Putting On production. He said yesterday, you know, it's easy to be overwhelmed, but just pick one thing. You have 10 tasks you need to do in the morning. Pick any single one of them, and in the process of doing it, you get in the flow. So it doesn't matter which one you start with. And I agree with him. So just pick one and get started. But with a really hard task, say climbing a mountain, like Kilimanjaro, as I have, or publishing books, what I talk about in chapter one is that you reverse engineer it, because you don't go from not writing to publishing overnight. And you don't go from not exercising to running a marathon overnight. Nothing happens overnight, right? So you reverse engineer on what is the step before that milestone that you need to accomplish, and what is the goal before that second to last one. So everything can be reverse engineered back to the little step that you can take today or tomorrow just to get started. And then months down the line, you will have your goal. You will achieve it.
You know, I love this. I love this. But before we go on, Joe, you want to do a quick station break? Yeah.
Yes. And then I'll be back in a few minutes.
Yes. Yes.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the South Bay Show. And we're talking with Rosanne Liu, author, Badassery 101, 10 Secrets to be the Confident Boss of Your Life, as well as other books such as Mastering Your Inner Game and Phenomenal Women coming up in September. We're going to be talking more with Rosanne. We're going to be talking more with her about mastering your life and getting things organized and all of that. We're really excited. It's just another example of what's great about the South Bay and the people that live here. So we're glad to be with her. And please join us and call your friends, tell your friends, text your friends to join us for this conversation.
And give out the number.
You, Jackie?
Give out the number. Give out the number,
let's
please.
Do that.
Yeah.
Give us a call at 714-242-5288. That's 714-242-5288. Please give us a call. We'd love to talk to you and get your comment or question. Thank you. All right.
I'll be right back. Okay. Jackie's in charge. Joe has to take a break. Joe has to take a break after the station break. It's overwhelming. Anyway, so Rosanne, all right. You mentioned Kilimanjaro. All right.
Yes.
I've done some mountain climbing myself. I want to know how that came about. What made you look at that and say, I have to do that? Start there. Let's start there.
I would say part of it is insanity.
Yeah.
I think you have to be a certain kind of good crazy to want to climb one of the seven big peaks of the world.
Yes.
But I was a non-hiker last spring, and I started hiking last spring, April of last year. And as I got more and more into it with the smaller hikes in Southern California, I realized, I really like this. I really enjoy this activity. And with my personality, I'm always thinking, okay, how can I go higher? How can I, do better than just hiking my local smaller mountains? And I don't know why, but Kilimanjaro just popped into my head. Like something about traveling to Africa, a different continent, and B, climbing a really famous high mountain, that just does it for me. You know, that does it for my personality. So
I
started training for it last summer. And so over 6 months of training, I feel like, okay, this is it. I feel like I'm ready. And then I went late September and started the climb.
Wow. What? Now tell me, Tell me about the preparation. Like, did you climb Whitney first, you know, to get a good feel for it? What did you do before that? I mean, you said you're going hiking.
Yeah.
Did you do Whitney first?
No. In fact, I'm going to Whitney for the first time on September 1st. So that's coming up. So
wow.
I just trained with the six peaks of SoCal. They are between 8,000 to 11,000 feet high. And I did five of the six peaks before I kind of ran out of time before my trip to Tanzania. So my highest in California so far has been 10,500 feet at Mount mm-hmm. San Bernardino. And then I had mm-hmm. to fly out for my trip. And then that was it. So I took my anti-nausea, anti-acute mountain sickness pill every day. Mm-hmm. And I had no problem going up until the summiting night when it was freezing cold. Freezing cold. So what got me was not the acute mountain sickness where people might get nauseous and they might start vomiting and dizzy. I didn't have those symptoms. But what got me was the extreme cold. I was ill prepared for the cold because we were going up.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, how tall is Kilimanjaro? Is that 23,000 or?
It's 19,341.
19,000. Okay. I'm thinking of McKinley. I think it's 23. How long did you acclimate before? Like, did you go there a couple of weeks in advance and work your way up a little to acclimate, or you just didn't have that issue at all with the anti nausea pills and stuff?
I didn't have that issue at all. I arrived on Saturday. And then I had a whole night to, get ready, rest, and just, rest. And then the next day, the next morning, 8:30 in the morning, our tour group left the hotel and made our way to the mountain. And how we acclimated with this particular six-day trip was there are two base camps. So at each base camp, every other day, we would acclimate and get ready.
Okay.
Well, at the last base camp, it was already, 16,000 feet at the very last base camp. So we had an overnight to acclimate.
Oh, all right. Wow. That's schedule. As I said, I've done some mountain climbing, and we give myself a week, at a much higher altitude, 8,000 or 10,000, just to acclimate there and then take it from there. But you just did it in 6 days. That's amazing. That's amazing.
If I had to do it over again, I would probably take a slightly longer trip to mm-hmm. just to get used to the surrounding and have time to look at the local village and just to acclimate better. And if I was to do it again, I probably wouldn't try to summit at midnight. I would go with a group that does not summit at midnight so that we will have more warmth because we can't work against climate and weather. I mean, it is what it
how,
is.
How cold was it? How cold was it?
It felt like my guide told me it's probably 0 degrees Fahrenheit.
All right.
So
that's
pretty cold. And I was ill prepared. My hands and feet felt so frozen. I wish I had brought chemical warmers for my hands and feet. Because even with three layers on of winter clothes that are good enough for Colorado, I was not warm enough for this mountain. That's
quite an accomplishment.
That's part of badassery. It's you learn what works and what doesn't work. And if something doesn't work, you do it again, having learned the lesson, and you come back, try again, being more prepared. So badassery is you don't just stop. You figure out how to do it better the next time you attempt it. And that's part of confidence.
Yeah. No, that's fantastic. That's fantastic. That's incredible advice. Again, I can't get over rule one because it's a great place to start. I don't want to go in order or anything, but give me another one of the rules. It doesn't have to be number two, or give me another rule that you want to focus on.
I would say tell perfection to take a hike and just do it.
Yeah, that's great.
because, you know, in this world of social media, and you see it on Facebook, Instagram, and Pinterest, everybody else's life seems so awesome and perfect and wonderful, right? Especially in the South Bay bubble. And so there's a real stigma, especially with, you know, millennials and even, you know, adults our age too, that unless something looks perfect the first time, they have a problem of putting it out there. They won't do it. They won't pull the trigger and show up with themselves or their product or their thing unless it looks absolutely perfect, right? Because they have this idea that it's got to look great and perfect the first time. Otherwise, I'm going to be so embarrassed. I can't put it out there. People will judge me, blah, blah, blah. But I say, tell perfection to take a hike, because your first attempt at anything will never be perfect. That's a mirage. That's a mirage you'll never reach. So just do it and figure out what went wrong or how you can do it better during your second and third and fourth attempts. Because perfection is overrated and it really does not exist. So whatever you want to do, you know, read chapter one, apply rule number one, figure out how to do it and do it. And two, forget about perfection, because it ain't going to happen. And just pull the trigger and put it out there and learn how to revamp it for your subsequent attempt.
Well, what it comes down to, you're talking about putting in your 10,000 hours. Absolutely. You know, Malcolm Gladwell's books, you know, he talks about you don't become an expert until you put in your minimum of 10,000 hours. And the best of the best in any field puts in a lot more time than that. And of course, going back to the whole social media thing, nobody puts the bad stuff on social media. You're right. Everybody tries to make their life look as wonderful. You know, it's all rainbows and unicorns and stuff. But yeah, so social media has skewed our perception of what life is in general. You're right. There's no such thing as perfection. Don't get sucked into it. Although, of course, what you were talking about earlier with your book, you don't just write it and hit publish. You know, you do have
right.
to go through, you know, the steps of, you know, edit, improve, make it sound better, reorganize it to make things flow better. So that's interesting. Did you have that experience with yourself with your first book?
Oh, yes. I have it with a lot of different experiences, not just publishing, you know, such as finding little grammatical or spelling errors in not only my book, but also other people's New York Times best-selling books. And I allow little mistakes, you know, because it's even the proofreaders, even if you have 10 proofreaders, guess what? They're mm-hmm. human, and humans make mistakes. And there's just certain things that Grammarly and five editors may not be able to catch, and you allow room for it, you apologize for it, you make it, maybe do a different edition, and then you move on from it. But we have to allow room for mistakes and not stop ourselves from doing something, because your first attempt won't be perfect at anything. I mean, Jackie, if you remember back to your first radio show, there's probably a few things that led up to the first airing of the show, or even during the first airing, that probably weren't ideal for you, but you aired it anyway, right? Because you wanted
right.
to do it. And then we learn how to do it better and better.
Yes. Yes, no, you're absolutely right.
And now 10,000 shows later, now you're an expert. Now the mistakes that you can avoid.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, I should go look that up to see how many shows we've done. We have done quite a few. I need to look up that number. But, you know, what you were saying about Grammarly and stuff, as I mentioned, I'm a reader. I read a lot. I read like 250, 300 books a year. So I read a lot.
Oh, my God. Wow.
And I seriously believe that if I had known what I know now, I should have become a proofreader, because – I'm in the bookstore every week. I still buy books because I enjoy that. I enjoy reading a physical book. When I travel, I use my tablet, my Kindle, because it's great for traveling. But books are my thing. I have a library that is unbelievable. But I can say this: every single book I read. I find errors in it. I just finished the new Stephen King novel.
Yeah.
And now he's normally great, but I did find one error in it. No. That's the new TV show. I think it's going to air on Hulu. This was called Outsider, a new book. But there are other. There's a website. Oh gosh, I'm gonna completely book errata or so. I can't remember what the name of it is, but it's on my favorites page, where you can go in, and it's a form, and you put in the name of the book, the author, the date, blah blah blah, and any errors that you find. And
oh, wow.
And I do that religiously, cross an error in a book, and I grab a post-it, and I just put the post-it on that page, and then when I'm done with the book, I can go back and go through all of them, and I can input the information onto this website. I had one author, I was so upset about this. There were so many errors, and big name, big New York Times bestseller, you know, 80 books published, blah blah blah. And there were like 60 errors in that book, obvious, glaring. I actually wrote the author on his Facebook page and his IMBD or whatever it was, and just reamed him because I was so horrified by the amount of errors in this book. But on the other hand, because I usually buy first editions, when you do find errors in first editions, they can be worth a lot of money. So. Just a side bar there.
Now,
Joe,
let me ask
Joe.
This.
Yeah.
Because
I'm back.
Oh, I was going to ask. Because you have found so many mistakes and you've put in so many entries on this website, have you gotten an offer from, say, a New York-based publisher offering you to be their chief proofreader?
No. This website is just a guy. It's just an individual guy that set this up. He's not with any company. He's not a publisher. He's just a guy. He's just a guy that set this up. And anybody can go in and do it. Now, I've been one of his most, you know, I've been one of his, I use his website like more than most people. I know I'm a little anal when it comes to this stuff. So. It is.
If I were a publisher, I would approach this website and see who's the most awesome, prolific proofreader who's submitting entries left and right, and who will offer them a job.
Rosanny, what your concept, your idea, Rosanny, reminds me of is that publishers should have a cadre, a collection of people that they turn to, and maybe crowdsource editing, crowdsource proofreading, and have 10 people proofread a book and until it's perfect.
That would be an interesting question for the publishers, wouldn't it? For the Random House and the Simon Schuster, on how many proofreaders across genres do they use per book? That would be an interesting question.
That would be, you know, Joe, we've been all over the map. Literally, we were just talking about Kilimanjaro in Africa. We've been all over the map while you took your little break. I asked Rosanny to give me another rule, not necessarily in order. And she was talking about throw perfection out the window, which I love.
Do it,
and don't expect it. And don't expect it to be perfect the first time. And you know something, Rosanny? I see that almost on a daily basis where, and especially my niece visiting, you know, whenever she comes out, I enjoy introducing her to new things, an activity, an art form, whatever it is. But, and I know this is very common with kids, but I see it with adults too. When they try something new, and it doesn't come out the way it's supposed to, or it doesn't happen the way it's supposed to, they get frustrated. And I look at them and I go, this is your first time doing this and you expect to be an expert?
Right.
Did you really expect that you were going to walk in here and do this and it was going to be perfect? Which
it's
is really common. It's really
insanity.
Common. It blows my mind. It absolutely blows my mind. And I said, this isn't anything, you know, and I like to jump around and do different things. You know, I do aerial yoga. You know, I get up in the ribbons and I do that stuff. You know, it took me weeks to be able to comfortably get myself in an inverted position. And yet people walk in, and when they can't do it the first try, they get frustrated and they walk away, which makes me, that pisses me off to no end.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I mean, that we got to stop expecting everything to be perfect, especially during our first or even first five attempts, because it's unreasonable to have that expectation.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I just recently, just a couple of weeks ago, I decided that I wanted to take drumming lessons.
What kind of drum?
Just, you know, regular drum set, you know, in a rock and roll band, drum set.
Yep.
And a friend of mine offered to give me lessons, and we had our first lesson, and I sat down with him, and he explained to me how he was going to go through this, and I said, I know that the drummer keeps the beat for the whole band. I said, I know that they're very, very important. They keep the rhythm. I said, and I understand that you either have that ability or you don't. I said, what I want to find out is, do I have that ability? You know, not that I'm going to be good at it at first, but I just want to know if I have that ability. And so we did an hour and a half lesson. We did an hour and a half lesson, and sure, I messed up left and right. It was my first time holding a pair of drumsticks. But he's like, yeah, you can do this. You know, so I'm like, okay. So now the real work starts. You know, I'm not going to be playing in a rock and roll band in the near future, but I wanted to do it, and I'm enjoying it, and there we go. I didn't expect to sit down and be, John Bonham.
I think most things can be learned. And that it takes time to become an expert. But I think most things can be learned because we have the human capacity to learn lots of different things. And you know what? Even if that drummer instructor had told you, no, Jackie, I don't think you have the aptitude for it, I will probably go take lessons from a different guy.
Yeah.
And just keep practicing. Because, you know, people misjudge all the time. And aptitude can be developed. That's the thing. A lot of our skills, we're not born with the skills, but the skills can be developed. Tells you, no, I don't think so. It doesn't mean the next five critics are going to say the same thing.
That's very true. That's very true. Yeah. Well, part of this drumming thing, I'm doing it for fun. You know, it's like it's not like I want to go out and be a drummer in a band. I'm doing it for fun. It's something that interests me. But then again, of course, you have to take into account natural ability. You know, there are some people that, I always say it's a good idea for every young person to go and have, there's another word for it, testing to see what your natural abilities are. I know that they do them in school where they go in, you go in and you test and they say, oh, you're good with detail. You'd be a good accountant or good engineer. I know that they do that, but there are also the physical natural abilities. You know, some people don't have a tin ear, you know, so they wouldn't necessarily want to go into a music situation. So I always think it's good to know your capabilities and the things that maybe won't work so well for you, the things that you lack, because we all have our gifts, right?
Right, the natural raw talents.
Yes, yes. Yeah, I find that fascinating stuff.
And part of it is,
I'm very glad.
You know, when we try and do something, you know, after we take perfection to take a hike and we go out there and do something, there are always going to be critics, right? I mean, I say, besides death and taxes, criticism and critics are the third most sure thing in life. We're never going to get rid of them.
But never thought of that.
What we talk about in, I think, chapter 2 is
you have to be your own number one fan. And we talk about how to deal with critics. And when you take perfection to take a hike and you go out and do stuff, there's going to be criticism, there's going to be constructive criticism, and there's going to be really negative, nasty criticism. But how we deal with those kinds of criticism, that's entirely up to us. And that's where badassery comes in. So the chapter teaches us how to examine criticism analytically in order to decide, am I going to adapt to this or am I going to let it go, the criticism.
Mm-hmm.
Joe, I want to be a badass, Joe.
Okay.
Already are. I think you guys already are.
She is. She is. She is very much.
I want to be even more badass. I want to be a master of badassery. I got to get this book and read it. It sounds fascinating. Our guest, Rosanne Liu, best-selling author of "You Did What Now?" and "How to Survive Elementary School." Her new book, Badassery 101, 10 Secrets to Be the Confident Boss of Your Life. We only touched on two of them because we don't want to give them all away. But the two that two secrets that we discussed, very, very important, very on point.
Do the hard stuff
and throw perfection out the window. Rosanne, give us contact information, website information, give us information so anybody that's listening that wants to get your book know more how they can contact you and buy your books.
Yes. My website is rosanne.com, rosanne.com. And on my Facebook business page, Write on Rosanne with the verb write. It will have events on the bookstores coming up where I'll be doing signings and talks this fall.
Okay. Any place local?
Yes. The first bookstore stop is Sandpiper in Torrance. And we are talking with Pages in Manhattan Beach about doing something in the fall as well.
Wow. That's exciting. That's exciting.
Yes. People can find me on Instagram and Twitter as well, Rosanne Liu, at everywhere.
You know, Joe, I wanted to mention that Rosanne had contacted me quite a while ago. And I think it was during the beginning of the summer. And you know how our summer schedule on the show is just always packed jam. There's so much going on. I don't know if either of you saw my weekend guide today. It was like 20 pages long. It's ridiculous how much is going on. I met you at South Bay Business Women's Association, the Let's Connect mixer, a few months back.
That's right.
And and then when I had to shuffle the schedule for August around, I was able to get her in, and I'm so glad we did. Joe, you wanna wrap this up?
All right. Well, what a great show it's been. And Rosanne Liu, another example of the best that the South Bay has to offer. If you want to be an author, if you want to follow your passion and talk about what you know, maybe you should get in touch with Rosanne and she can help you do that, set that goal. We're thrilled to have you. And of course, tomorrow we're going to talk about a lot of different things. Jackie, what's the topic tomorrow?
Oh, tomorrow we're going to have Steve Collins on from Hermosa Cyclery. We're going to talk about those pesky scooter issues that different cities are dealing with now. That's going to be interesting to see what's going on with that.
Yeah, that's great. Love that place. They've been a fixture in our family's life, the Hermosa Cyclery, for 20 years or longer, 30 years almost. And it's exciting to talk about that, but we're also going to talk about Bike at the Beach coming up this coming Saturday, August 11th.
Yes.
At the Manhattan Beach Studios. We hope to see everyone there. Jackie and I will be broadcasting live from the Bite at the Beach event, and we're excited about that. We'll see you all next. We'll see you all tomorrow right here. And thank you, Jackie.
But they're actually going to see us on Saturday because we're doing a Facebook Live podcast. So I was just told last night that the tickets are sold out. You can no longer buy tickets for Bite at the Beach. They're sold out. So if you want to see what's going on, all you got to do is tune into our podcast. And we're putting the links up as we do this show. They're going up. So.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.